Back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're answering your questions tonight about living wills, last will and testaments, and afterlife planning. My guests are attorneys Bobby Henry and Sean Bartley. They're answering your questions and lines are open. Give us a call. As I said before, if you are having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I'm going to take as many phone calls as I can at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Right before the break, Bobby was talking about that case that he was dealing with. So with the children filing a caveat to their father's will, was there an outcome or is it still?
It's still pending.
Still pending.
It's still pending.
So what do you think is going to happen if he was indeed of sound mind and they're just challenging it? How does that?
The burden of proof is actually on them because they filed the caveat. They're going to have to prove that somehow this will is not their father's document. He didn't sign it. That's correct. And that's a high hurdle now. It's not something that they can do very easily. But when you're talking about tens of thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, people say, you know, I don't have anything to lose. Why don't I just go ahead and file this caveat? Maybe I pay a lawyer, you know, a couple thousand dollars, but I stand to gain maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that happens.
Speaking of which, a couple of thousand dollars or however much it costs, how much does it cost to get a will?
Well, that's a good question. And it's generally up to the client and the particularity of their assets and how detailed they want to be. There's flat fee wills, and that usually involves people who don't have a large legacy or a great deal of property or assets to pass along after their debt. Or it could be somebody with just a few assets and a few interested people, children, a spouse. It could be really simple. But the more complex your life is, let's say you had children from a prior spouse, more than one marriage, you have $1 million worth of assets, you have more than one Breitling watch or more than one Rolex or a beach home in Ocean right. City or South Carolina. Those kind of things complicate an estate planning matter. And if it's simple, it could be a simple flat fee, maybe $2,000. But if it's going to be complex and requires a great deal of contemplation, detail, and planning and tax avoidance, it's going to go probably an hourly rate and could run up, you know, in couples of thousands of dollars. It all depends on the complexity of the situation.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Glenn calling from Waldorf. What's on your mind, Glenn?
Hey, first of all, I'd like to say thanks for this program, Mr. Fisher. Appreciate
sure thing.
It. You're always on the ball. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. My question
thanks,
is that if you find out that someone in your family is misusing, who has power of attorney over one of your parents, is misusing their funds, what does the law say and what can you do?
You want to try to tackle that one, Bobby? You mentioned power of attorney earlier.
Actually, unfortunately, it happens more often than we would like to think. However, if they are using, say, a parent's funds for their own personal benefit and their own personal gain, mm-hmm. you can certainly speak to that parent if, in fact, that parent is if that parent is competent.
Right.
If that parent is not competent, you can bring an action against that particular person to have them either removed from being their power of attorney, because literally it's akin to stealing, if you will. Because if they are spending the assets down. Now, that gets a little tricky after the person dies because, you know, that becomes a situation where once the person passes on and now you find out that the person who was charged with being their power of attorney for the last 2, 3, 4 years of their life spent all the assets down, you go to the funeral home, you don't have enough money to pay for the services. Why? Because you look into mom or dad's account and there's almost no money there, but yet 2 or 3 years ago there was $100,000 there. So you're asking the question, what happened to the money? And so then you have to end up bringing an action against that particular member of your family.
So power of attorney has to do with the living.
Absolutely.
But not the dead.
The power, here's the way you can remember a power of attorney. Very, very simple. a power of attorney dies with the person.
Okay.
A power of attorney only gives someone the power to do what the person who gave it could do. Once you die, you can't do anything. So the power of attorney is basically...
Can you have a power of attorney for a person who is competent? For example, if my daughter, she's 18, God forbid, but it, you know, if my daughter had power of attorney now, but I am still of sound mind, can I give her power of attorney and she just ignores it until I become not able to handle my business? Is that possible?
Yes, it is, as long as there's no expiration on there. Sometimes they put an expiration on the power of attorney. But, you know, your daughter could exercise it. I mean, even though you're fully competent, mm-hmm. because, you know, you work all the time.
Right.
And, you know, I need somebody to do this, that, or the other. Now, powers of attorney are usually general in nature. If, for instance, you wanted her to close, remember when you bought that house mm-hmm. down in Palm Springs?
Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Now, if you couldn't fly out there to go to closing and to sign your documents, you would do a specific power of attorney for your daughter to fly out there and consummate that particular transaction. Mm-hmm. That's the way, you know, you would handle that.
And just tell her to take the jet.
Also in power of attorneys in estate planning, you can have what's called an effective date, meaning that the power of attorney would only be effective upon some date or some occurrence. Most power of attorneys become effective when the maker of the power of attorney is not competent to exercise or handle their own affairs. And in my power of attorneys, I often state and name the person's primary care physician, or state that the primary care physician, along with an objective second doctor, must make the determination that this person isn't competent to handle their own affairs.
Okay.
And then they could proceed using the power of attorney.
All right. Thank you so much. And Glenn, thank you for your phone call. Valerie, calling from Maryland. Right. Thanks for calling back. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for taking my call, Harold.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I have a two-part quick question. Number one, I currently have a will, but I want to know if I should do a trust instead, because I have my own business and a 9-year-old son. And the second part of my question, I have a relative who left me a piece of property in her will. Didn't ask for it. She left it to me. Come to find out, she did say upon death that the property or the mortgage will be paid off. Upon receiving the property, it turns out that there's a large, hefty mortgage balance on the property. So my question is who's responsible for taking care of that mortgage balance, the estate or myself, because I inherited through a will?
Wow.
Those are my two questions.
The mortgage question is an interesting one, but it's simple. You're not responsible for the mortgage. You didn't sign the note, deed of trust, and you didn't obligate yourself to that mortgage. And sometimes in some wills, I have a particular case now where the will specifically said that this person shall inherit this land, and before they inherit the land, the personal representative or executor shall satisfy the outstanding mortgage and the person take possession of the property. Now, if you do take possession of the property, you're not obligated to take on the mortgage. And more often than not, the mortgage company would want you to qualify if you were going to take on the mortgage. But the mortgage remains attached to the property, even if they deeded the property over to you. Sometimes some people want the property, and there are other times people don't want the property because there is an outstanding mortgage obligation on it. And if that mortgage goes unpaid, then they could foreclose on the property.
So she could lose. So in other words, this property was given to her by this relative, and she owns the property. And if she doesn't pay the mortgage, she could lose it.
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll lose the property.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But now
we did an appraisal. The appraisal is not worth, the property's not worth as much as the appraisal.
So it's underwater.
So I opted to give the property back because it wasn't going to be cost effective or economical for me to do so.
Sometimes you can balance that out, and if the mortgage company knows that there are no funds that can satisfy the outstanding obligation because the person who was obligated to pay the debt has passed on. Sometimes the mortgage company will compromise their position if you gave them some dollars rather than them expending a great deal of funds and foreclosing on the property.
Okay.
So her estate is not supposed to pay off the outstanding mortgage balance.
Well, you got to look at the will and see what the will says specifically.
Yeah. Okay.
Have the money.
Valerie, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Joanne, calling from Upper Marlboro. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my question was, say if I don't have a will, maybe I might have wrote something out to get it notarized. Would that be sufficient?
Bobby?
That's considered a holographic will, and that would not be significant. No.
So she couldn't just write it on a napkin, sign it, and have a witness like they do in the movies. Not going to work.
No. Let me just say this real quickly about that. Whether you try to write it out, let me tell you why you really shouldn't. Likewise, we talked earlier about the cost of wills. See, what people try to do is they try to avoid paying for the services of an attorney to prepare that. Let me tell you why you need to do it. You can go on the internet and you can spend $19.95 and you can get a will. And you can try to pass on all of your worldly possessions. But think about that for a minute. Do you really want to spend $19.95 to pass on that $500,000 house that you own out in Montgomery County?
But I think, Bobby, the question is not so much $19.95 or a couple of thousand. The question is, what is legal?
Well, now, the holographic will, Maryland's not going to recognize that.
Okay.
But I wanted to make sure that we understood, because why would you write it? Why would someone go through the time and the labor to write something out on a napkin? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. Number one, you may outlive that ink on the napkin.
Okay.
And it would be gone. You want something that is going to legitimately transfer your wealth, your belongings, everything you worked a lifetime for onto your heirs.
So what makes the document legal? I mean, does it, just because I give it to you doesn't necessarily make it legal? There's still a process, isn't it?
There is a process.
So what's the process that makes it legal? Could you type it out and take it down to the, get it notarized, take it down to the courthouse and, or what?
Yeah, you can.
Actually, believe it or not, it doesn't have to be notarized.
Okay. I mean, I don't know.
Actually, doesn't have to be notarized. Now, but you do have to have your witnesses, though.
I see.
Your witnesses, and there's other things that go. I mean, this probably takes more time than we have, but suffice it to say, the witnesses have to actually be in the room and watch you sign it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go, Joanne. Something to think about. Thank you so much for your phone call. Got lots of calls I want to grab real quick.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from Northwest D.C. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Renee. Thank you for this program. It's so informative, and I really appreciate you all having this.
Mm-hmm.
The question that I wanted to ask... My name as well as my sister's name is on the house that I reside in right now. And when my father passed away, my father had a deed of trust. And in his deed of trust, he wanted to make sure that we all always had a home. And he put in there that, you know, he wanted us to have a home. So before he died, our names were put on the house. Recently, one of my siblings had approached me said, you know, just think about it, and said something about, you know, we should really think about putting this in trust. And I'm not really sure if I'm really in agreement with that. I really don't see the benefit.
What is that? What is she talking about?
I think she's talking about an actual deed. A deed of trust is a document where the mortgage company informs the world that they have a superior outstanding mortgage on the property.
Well, our house is paid for.
Okay, so then it's just a deed. Then you have a deed that your dad executed and he put everyone's name on it so that they would have ownership interest in the property. Now, depending on how you all own the property and how the property is titled will determine your ownership interest in the property upon you passing away. There's something called co-tenants, and then there's something called joint tenants. If you're joint tenants on the property, Renee, that means that when one of the siblings passes away, the other two siblings own it outright. And then the last surviving sibling, if they're owned as joint tenants, would end up owning the property. Now, if you're co-tenants on the property, it can get complicated because there someone could possibly sue for partition, meaning that, hey, I'm a co-tenant on this property. I'm entitled to one-third of the property because three of us siblings own it. Either cash me out the fair market value. Let's say the house is worth $3 million. And right. One of the siblings goes, hey, I want $1 million cash because I don't live there. I receive no benefit from the house. And I want to send my kids to college and I want to retire. Mm-hmm. They sue for partition.
Go ahead.
We've all agreed that we want to keep this in a family and this will be the family home. But when she had approached me about it, to me, I don't see the benefit of changing it. She said, well, really, it protects us all and no one can take anything away. But my thing is you have to have someone who's the executor to make decisions. And if our names are already on it, why would we put it in a trust? What is the benefit of doing that?
Real quick answer, because I've got to go to a break.
Really, really quickly, one reason that you might use to put it in a trust is because your dad, he transferred that property before his death. You're going to have a huge tax hit if that is a big house up on the Gold Coast, which he may have bought for $20,000, $30,000 and is now worth $3 million. You're going to take on your dad's basis because he transferred it prior to his death. Okay. But on the other side of the break, we can follow up.
All right. I need to take a break. Renee, stay with us. We will have some more information for you. Also, Antoinette, Latoya, and Ray, we're talking to you next. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue talking about wills, living wills, afterlife estate planning. You want to finish up with Renee about this issue of a trust. Renee, let me just make sure I'm clear. You and your sister, you and one of your sisters are on the deed of the house?
There's four of us, including my mother. My parents were divorced. So my mother, I guess you could say it's half hers. And then my father, left his half because he had remarried and he did not want that to become.
Hold on. Let's not get down into the weeds.
Okay.
You said you and your sister. So
right.
Does that mean that other sisters are not listed on the property?
No, they're on all of my sisters' names are on the property.
Well, then what's the trust thing? Why I think she asks a legitimate question. If everybody's on the property, what is the benefit of a trust?
Right. That's what I'm saying. To me, it makes no sense.
The benefit of the trust would be to continue your father's wish and family legacy, and that the trust becomes the owner of the property and not just one individual. But when you have a trust, you have to determine who's going to be the trustee and the person that's going to manage the trust, be responsible to pay, the upkeep, expenses, maintenance, and more importantly, the taxes on the property. And so you put it in the trust for the benefit of the beneficiaries, which tends to be more than one person when it comes down to a family. And so I think your sister wants to ensure that if the property's put into a trust, that you all don't get come to loggerheads or go to war over whether or not the property should be sold, partitioned, and once it's sold, who gets what cut of the money. But once it goes into a trust, that puts a severe obstacle in front of anyone, attempting to sell for their fair share or monetary award from the sale of the property.
Well, trust and believe, you're going to need an attorney to help figure that one out. Renee, thank you so much. We appreciate your phone call. Ray, calling from Fort Washington. What's on your mind, Ray?
Hey, this is Ray in Fort Washington.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
And I just wanted to make a quick comment. I pretty much got a will by default years ago during the 1978 Iran crisis. I was in the military. I got assigned to the Middle East in 1979.
Okay.
One of the things I had to do was make out a will. So I said, okay, get my wife to make one out too. So we've had a will that long. And my point is actually we look at wills most time at the end of folks' life, but we need to start making that part of like a part of the marriage. When people get married or something, introduce wills earlier in life. It is more easier for people to go ahead and do it. Now you're just getting to the process of updating it.
Okay. You make a good point, Bobby. You were going to talk about that same thing.
Yeah, I think you have to look at your will every couple of years. I was a JAG officer. I've done numbers of wills for our soldiers who are deploying overseas. But we always tell them to come back, you know, every couple of years, have somebody look over your will and, you know, consider having it updated, having a new one done, simply because people pass on, people drop out of sight. You may have your children going over to a particular person to serve as their guardian. That person's no longer there. That will that you did in 68, 78, 88, or 98 may no longer be able to do what you wanted to do in 2016.
Okay, Ray, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. LaToya calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling. LaToya, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you all this evening? My question is, I'm single and I don't have any children. Let's say that I pass away before I get married, and I do a will, and my family does not know that I have a will, and they come in and start taking my assets, going through my belongings. How can you avoid that type of situation from happening? I hope I'm asking the question correctly.
Sure, LaToya. I think you are answering the question correctly. And what you need to do is make sure that someone you love and trust in your family knows that there's a will. You don't want to create a will and then put it in some place where the family doesn't know about it, a safe deposit box in a bank that you hardly ever use, or, God forbid, you leave it with your attorney and they don't know that you passed away, because the court and the state likes to have somebody responsible for this property and to dispose of it and or pay taxes and administrative fees to get it done. So you need to make sure that somebody in your family knows that you have this will and knows who has possession of it. Now, one of the tough things I find with this situation is that people want to give certain family members certain powers or certain gifts, and so you don't tell your family so as not to cause dissension amongst family members if you're treating one family member more favorably than the other.
I have a family member that I'm giving more to than another, and all my clothes and stuff I want to give to an organization as opposed to my family having that. You know, I want to give all my clothes and jewelry to an organization.
Okay.
There's one thing that I might suggest to you, which may be very easily. You're in Fort Washington. If you have a will, you have designated an executor or a personal representative. That should be in your will. Is that correct?
I haven't done one, but I'm...
Okay. Suffice it to say, just simply tell the executor you have a will and it's on file in the Register of Wills office in Upper Marlboro. That way they will never be able to get into your will. Now, you can always go, because people are under the misimpression that once I file the will, I can never change it. A will is not effective until your death. You can go back and change it at any time. It costs you $5 to put it on record in Upper Marlboro.
Okay.
So then your executor, upon your passing, will say, oh, she told me she had a will and it's on file in Upper Marlboro. They go up there, they get the will, they do everything that you ask.
Okay.
All right, LaToya, thank you so much. Let's go to Antoinette. Antoinette calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Antoinette. I was taking care of my aunt and she passed away. And my question is, when she was living, her kids and stuff like that never came around to take care of her and all that kind of stuff. But when she was living, I was the only person that was coming around her and helping her and doing things with her and everything. And she told me that I was in the will, in her will, and that I had 2% of $2.5 million.
So what's your answer to that? What's your question?
My question is, the family member, the beneficiary of the will, nobody never contacted me about the will. How do I find out that information that my aunt told me that when she was living about what belongs to me that was inside of the will?
And she's in D.C.
She's in D.C.
She's in
Bowie. Okay. Or was.
You know, where do I go at to find out the information? Because I don't, you know, the family member, the beneficiary, never came to me. No attorneys never called me or nothing. So I need to find out
Here's what you can do. Go to Upper Marlboro on the fourth floor to the Register of Wills office and give them her name. You can look it up to see whether or not an estate was ever opened. And if an estate was opened, was there a will that was filed? You can read a copy of that will right there and see if your name is in it. Because if your name is in it and it was probated, as we explained earlier what probate is, and it was probated, let me tell you, they could not settle that estate without sending you what was designated to go to you in that will.
So if her name was in it and it passed through the hands of an attorney after the passing of her aunt, everyone needs to be contacted.
They would be contacted.
Yeah,
they would be contacted. But there are scenarios where the will is filed and an executor or personal representative gets hold of the assets and doesn't properly distribute those assets and spends up all the money on themselves, their families, their friends, and they make inequitable distributions in violation of the will.
And I have a case exactly like that, but let me tell you what you do in that particular situation, and that is when you are the personal representative, you're appointed, and especially when there are assets in the estate, then they have to file what's called a bond. And the bond is in case they do something just like this.
Insurance.
Something wrong. Yeah. It's insurance. And we do what you call condemn the bond so that we can get the bonding company to pay out back to the estate the monies that were taken.
We'll start in Upper Marlboro, first of all, Antoinette. Real quick, Regina, Upper Marlboro. Real quick, I have about 1 minute.
Yeah, I don't have a will or an attorney. How do I go about getting one, or where could I find an attorney to get a will done?
I'd love to be of service to you. Me and Mr. Henry would love to be of service to you. Simply go to the internet, Google our names, or you can go to bartley-law.com, call our office, or send
it. Regina, hold on. All of the information will be on WHUR.com before 8:30 tonight. So when you go on WHUR.com, you'll see their wonderful smiling faces and their contact information. So just hold on, and I promise, as always, we always post after the program, okay?
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Thank you both so much, attorneys Sean Bartley and Bobby Henry. I really appreciate all of the information you've been able to share with us. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, September 7th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at hfisher@whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3.